So, I'm not going to talk to you guys about Weird Al today. Much. I do have my new favorite tie. We were allowed to bring one item to be signed. Well, I don't have a Weird Al tie. I haven't been able to find one. Now I have one. But I did want to share one thing from the event, as I told you guys what my plan was. Like, how am I going to not make a fool of myself and not get tongue-tied? And, Well, one of us is wearing a hat and a shirt with the other one's name on it. I'll probably figure it out from there. So I told you, I had the plan, what I'm going to say, so I'm not going to end up tongue-tied and be the bumbling fan. So, I got up there and did exactly what I was going to say. I said, I'm a minister of Romeo Church of Christ, and in the past months since getting the tickets, I've been titling my sermon titles after your song titles. And he says, oh, wow, I'm honored. That's great. Which ones have you been using? And I went, And so that list of 13 or 14 that I put up for you, I came up with like 3 or 4. But it's still one. So I was kicking myself afterward, but it went well. And I said, well, I never really thought about some of those working. And I asked what some of the lessons were on it. So it was a good day. But that's not what I came here to tell you about today. Today we're talking about 2 Corinthians. Right? In our Sunday morning class, as we've been going through 2 Corinthians, there's been a little bit of disagreement about what exactly is going on in the book. There is disagreement over, is this a harsh letter, or is this the nice love letter that comes after the harsh letter? Is that fair that we've been kind of split on that a little bit? Mike said, you know, would you say this letter was harsh? And someone was like, yeah, yeah. And Mike said, no. And he said, would you say that, he said, would you say 1 Corinthians was a nice, encouraging letter? And someone was like, yeah, I think it was. He said, no. And so we've been going around a little bit. I think we've been meeting in the middle somewhere, but that's been the discussion. Is this the book where he's beating up on these people for getting things wrong? Or is this the book where he's embracing them and showing them love and showing that he's trying to make amends for maybe what he said before? And I think, ultimately, would say maybe the reason that different ones of us saw different things in there is because both of those things are in there. He does have a lot of harsh words to say, especially early on. And well, even in this week's reading, when he's talking about, and this is where we closed the class this morning, talking about examining yourselves and testing yourselves, whatever the difference is there. He says, you'll realize that Christ is in you, well, unless you fail the test. And so there's still that question of, you know, are you people really getting it? And so I think we can see both of those things in there. I think that shouldn't be a strange idea. Relationships are complex, right? Whether you're talking about a one-on-one relationship, or if you're talking about a relationship with a community. And one thing that we see is that Paul has a long-standing relationship with this Corinthian church. And their relationship goes even beyond these two letters. I mean, as it is, we have two of his longest letters written to the same church. But if you look into what they're saying, we see there's more going on there. We find out that there are even more letters between Paul and the church. We know that Paul spent a while in Corinth. that it was his base of operations for a little while, and they took care of him while he was there. And we know that before 1 Corinthians, he had spent time there, and then he was away. We don't know if he had sent them a letter before that, but we know they sent him a letter. Because after he's gone through, so he's talking about unity, talking about the ideas about the gospel as foolishness and as a stumbling block, and you remember some of these things that we've gone over in 1 Corinthians. When he gets to near the end of the letter, he says, "Now concerning the things you wrote to me about." And he goes on to answer some of their questions. So we know there'd been that correspondence. And then when we go from 1 Corinthians to 2 Corinthians, we naturally think, well, we've turned the page. And 1 Corinthians ends on one page, 2 Corinthians is on the next page. Obviously, this is the next interaction that he had with them. But as we read through, we find out that wasn't the case. In between 1 and 2 Corinthians, he visited Corinth again, that he mentioned he was going to at the end of 1 Corinthians, and apparently it did not go well. Apparently there was conflict between he and the church there. And he left feeling very different thoughts about the congregation there than those that appear in 1 Corinthians. And apparently he wrote them another letter. Because he mentions writing this harsh letter. And apparently this letter that we don't have in between these two, he let them have it. And he talks about 2 Corinthians, his motivation behind writing that letter. He talks about why he said some of the things he said, why he was, why he didn't want to say some of them, why he didn't want them to be bothered, and yet he says, "I would say the same thing again," because the same thing was true. So when we come to 2 Corinthians, we have a history of a relationship here. And we have the complexity that you expect from a relationship with history. And so this book is filled with both the harshness and the love. And then when we come down to the end here, twice he talks about that he's coming back again. Not in like the, you know, "Christ says I shall return." I'm coming to visit again. I guess saying I'm coming back again in a church means something a little different. He says, "I'm coming for a third visit." So after the very good long stay and the very rocky visit, he's coming back to see them again. And he wants them to know how he's feeling about them. He says, this is actually the second reference he says of his third visit. "This will be my third visit to you. Every matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. I already gave you a warning when I was with you the second time. And now I repeat it while absent. On my return, I will not spare those who sinned earlier or any of the others." Now, this sounds like the side of the class that says this is the harsh letter. Right? This is saying when he comes back, he wants to see that some things have changed. Or the harsh things he wrote in that middle letter, he's going to be saying them in person, and perhaps more forcefully. But his other reference to seeing them for a third time kind of swings to the other side. He says, "Now I am ready to visit you for the third time. I will not be a burden to you, because what I want is not your possessions, but you. After all, children should not have to save up for their parents, but parents for their children. So I will very gladly spend for you everything I have and expend myself as well. If I love you more, will you love me less?" And so there's still some question there, but here we have, and this is where the other side of the class says, "Oh, look, this is obviously a congregation that cares very deeply for. And this was in some of the contexts he'd been talking about with taking up collections. He said, I didn't take it from you. I didn't ask for your money. He says he didn't want to be a burden to them. He wanted to empty himself for them and to show his love. Have you ever had a relationship where sometimes at the same time you can feel angry and great love? Anybody ever come across that unique situation of loving somebody and they're ticking you off? I should tread very lightly. But you probably know what I'm talking about. This is that idea of relationships are complex. Relationships and emotions can be hard to understand sometimes. In those times, I like to turn, I said I'm done talking about Weird Al, so I'm going to talk about the other hero. Looking at this, looking at the way Paul deals with Corinth reminds me of a song by, you probably know where I'm going, Mr. Rogers. You know, you can laugh at me. But one of the things that Mr. Rogers did that made him so successful is he said he wants to speak to kids, not talk down to them, and help them try to work through some of the hard things in life. And how many of us are still trying to work through the hard things in life? All right, so we can still use these things. So he has this song called The People You Like the Most. I tried to find a clip of it, but it was kind of one of his older ones, so I could only find the text. It says, it's the people you like the most who can make you feel happiest. It's the people you like the most who manage to make you feel snappiest. And you know, at the end of every episode, he wishes you a snappy new day, right? But this is the second verse of the song. Huh? Where'd it go? Okay. Again, I should have just left it alone earlier. The first verse says, it's the people you like the most who can make you feel maddest. It's the people you like the most who manage to make you feel baddest. Have you had this experience? Of course you have. When you invest in a relationship, when you surrender yourself enough to be vulnerable, you will get great joy. And it will cause sadness at times. Right? I know I said I'd just leave it alone, but I almost had it, and I'll bring it here. It reminded me... It's going to go away. It reminded me of a Calvin and Hobbes comic here. Calvin has lost his tiger Hobbes out in the woods. Doesn't know where it is. And so in this strip, which is part of the... this is where he thought he lost him. I didn't get the backstory right on this. Calvin's parents are talking. Here's Hobbes. Where's Calvin? I don't see him. Where could he have gone? We just turned... I'm right. This was at the zoo. Right, Chris? This was at the zoo. Calvin's lost at the zoo. He's trying to find Hobbes. He ends up trying to look for him at the tigers. Where could he have gone? We just turned our backs for a minute. And why didn't he take Hobbes? You stay here in case he comes back. I'll go look for him. And then here's the what I thought of. Calvin's dad, as he goes walking away, trying to find his son who's run off at the zoo. Being a parent is wanting to hug and strangle your kid at the same time. Have you felt that? I don't even have to substitute the name Calvin. Maybe substitute it for another name in addition to, but You know that feeling. You know it with your kids. You know it with your spouses. You know it with your parents. That idea of, I want to hug them and strangle them at the same time. When we get close enough to somebody, we allow ourselves to be in a place where we can feel happiest, we can feel maddest. And I think that works in churches as well. I think how many of us have known somebody who has been very involved in a congregation and done a lot of work and has you know, even defined their lives for many years, and then they get hurt. And how hard it is to recover from that. Where you've been at your highest points, that makes the low feel that much tougher. I have a close friend from college who's been going through that right now. And we're struggling to figure out how to reach him, try to help. But it's the complexity of relationships and emotions and this that is so hard. We see that in 2 Corinthians. They've messed up. They don't understand. They've listened to false teachers. They've looked at Paul and started to call him a false teacher. They've said he's not qualified. They say he's two-faced. He says he's harsh in his letters and nice in person. They've made so many errors. And like he says, if you examine yourself and test yourself, you may end up failing. But at the same time, he knows these people. He taught them. He points out at the beginning of 1 Corinthians, he didn't baptize any of them except that guy and that guy and that guy. But nobody else. And one of those things where you sometimes think if Paul had an eraser, some of the stuff would look a little different. But he has those relationships. He knows these families, and that love will not allow him to write them off. He says, so I'm coming for a third visit. We're going to hash this out. He's not giving up on these people. This is why I write these things when I'm absent. That when I come, I may not have to be harsh in the use of my authority. The authority the Lord gave me for building you up, not for tearing you down. Because I'm speaking harshly. I don't want to tear you down. That's not what we do. That's not what we do as a church. We build each other up. So he said in 1 Corinthians, we are common builders with Christ to build up the church and to edify everyone. And so finally, brothers and sisters, rejoice. Strive for full restoration. Encourage one another. Be of one mind. Live in peace. You know, the easy stuff. And the God of love and peace will be with you. It's not easy, but it's worth it. He said, I'm coming and we are going to talk about the things that really matter. And relationships aren't easy in a marriage or in a family or in a church. But they are worth working for. When I see this relationship in Corinthians, and I see congregations that I've been blessed to be a part of, I think about the way that a church works and the way relationships work in a church. It is different than a marriage or a family. And we talk about it in different ways. I think our goals are a little different. As a church, I don't think the right image is to say that we fit together like a puzzle, you know, where you say everybody's different, but here we interlock and come together and fit just right. We don't fit just right. That's okay. It's not even like a mosaic where, you know, you got neat rows of tiles that come together to make a picture. It's nice, But churches are messier than that. Amen? All right. But I think we can say that the way the church works is maybe more like a collage. Mismatched, messy edges, stepping on toes and overlapping and getting in each other's way sometimes. I'm not going to ask for an amen. But we come together to form a beautiful picture. And we each play our parts, and we rely on each other to tell the whole story, to show that picture of Jesus, that we may not be able to live up to that model on our own, but when we come together, we get ourselves closer and closer and closer to showing, at least when we're doing it right, we get closer to showing what Jesus looks like. And your Christian brothers and sisters may make you happiest and snappiest at times. And they may make you saddest and maddest at times. And you may even find yourself wondering, why are we even bringing up this song? Because right now I'm asking, are these people really the people that I like most? Maybe sometimes we ask that. But God created us for community. And He gave us the church not to frustrate us, but to raise us to be something more than we can be on our own. I think that's why Paul knew that it was still worth to keep writing and to keep visiting those stubborn Corinthians, even if he didn't always seem happy about it. He seems to mention other apostles that didn't care to be in Corinth. And in some places in 2 Corinthians, it looks like he kind of felt like he understood those people at times, understanding why it may not be worth the hassle, but he knew it was worth it. And it's still worth it today. Maybe a good description of 2 Corinthians might be an angry love letter. Maybe. Full of passion in both directions. As we close, I want to close with another example of an angry love letter that I came across. All right. I got it from Mr. Rogers. It maybe sums up this idea in fewer words than it took Paul. He tells a story about a family he knows and a daughter who got very angry with her mother and slammed the door in her room, and the mother was waiting at the door trying to be able to talk with her, and she said she slipped a note out to her mother under the door. "I hate you, Mommy." I think we know the feeling there. And a little bit later, the girl calmed down. She came out of her room, and she saw that her mother had put this note on the counter. And so she turned it over and wrote, "I love you, Mommy." And then she added, "P.S., I will never hate you as much as I love you." If we're going to be a part of the church, we're going to have to deal with people. You know, we say sometimes church would be easy if it weren't for the people. But God called us together. Didn't call us to be on our own. He called us to see what incredible things we can do, even in that complicated, messy relationship that happens between people. I think that is an encouraging message in 2 Corinthians, as you see Paul trying to work out that relationship. I think we can learn from that. And maybe sometimes we use more words than necessary. I love that message of, I will never hate you as much as I love you. I was about to use a bunch more words, but let's not do that. Let's close up. We're going to sing a song, and you know how this part goes. If there's things on your heart, if there's things in your life you want to share, we want to hear it. We're a family. We share the highs and the lows. If you have something to share, please do that. If you need baptism this morning, let's do that too. If there's anything you need this morning, please let us know as we stand and sing.
Just as I am without one knee, but